Hi, everybody. We want to thank our sponsor, Legion M. They are a wonderful company. We love working with them. You can go to their website, Legion M. They're also on all the various socials. They do really fun meetups. You can talk to directors. You can become a part of the projects they choose. They even have a program right now where you can help them find great movies to support. So go to their website to learn more. We also want to remind you that we have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies. And today's guest is very special for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that she's an Oscar nominee this year for Best Supporting Actress for her work in
Everywhere, All at Once.
I said that.
Everything.
I was trying to say that.
Everywhere, all at once.
And she is inevitably Jamie Lee Curtis.
Shut up.
I know, right?
It's not possible. Really? I am.
So when my dad, when we found out that Santa Barbara agreed and you were going to be getting the Maltin Modern Master Award.
At the Santa Barbara International Film Festival.
Which we're very proud of. The first thing I said to my dad was, how many people do you speak to where you've met and interviewed their parents?
Oh, so interesting.
And
wow.
We were thinking about it, and I said, well, you've interviewed some Houstons. We've got some Houstons in there.
And some Fondas.
Yeah, but it's just...
No, I never met Henry.
No, really?
No, I mean, there's some key people that, though I was fortunate enough to get to some of them, didn't get to him.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's wild, isn't it? But that's...
But Laura Dern,
yes.
I met Diane Ladd and Bruce Dern.
Got a triangle there. But now I was lucky. I didn't get to meet your dad, but I was very lucky because I got to meet your mom a handful of times.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to talk about powerful women, she was teeny tiny, much like my mama, teeny tiny. But my God, and funny, and just when she was in her room, you very much understood why she was cast and why she was a star, because damn.
Yeah.
And the best thing, we were in Telluride and you were going to interview her for something. And there was a whole crew and she had lipstick on her teeth and nobody said anything to her. And I think I was 12 and I was really nervous, but I went over and I said, I'm so sorry, but you have lipstick on your teeth. And she goes, this is a real friend. And I was like, I love you so much. And I just think you're spectacular. And then I went and hid in a corner. But what a woman.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's a perfect example of my mom. You can put lipstick on her. She was not a fancy person. You can put lipstick on her. And then if she has lipstick on her teeth and you say so to her, she will say, that's a friend, because it's the artifice. Lipstick is an artifice. It's a makeup. It's designed to sort of, enhance your mouth.
Yeah.
And yet lipstick on your teeth is a very real thing that happens to people. And the movie business doesn't ever really show you that.
Right.
They show you the pretty beautiful. My mom was in a movie once, and the poster for it was, the tagline for the poster was, temptation is a thing called money and a red-lipped blonde.
Huh.
It was a movie she was in, I think, with Robert Mitchum, and I can't remember what the name of the movie was, but I remember the tagline. And you know, that's that thing, the red-lipped blonde.
Right.
But you very rarely peel back the layer of the onion and actually see somebody with lipstick on their teeth. So you did my mother a huge solid, as I'm sure you would do for me if you guys could see that I had lipstick on my teeth, which I don't wear lipstick because I have really skinny little lips. And if you put lipstick on me, I look weird.
It's, as I say, I've been very lucky because of what my dad does to meet a number of legends and people who made the business what it is and who remain iconic. And that's a word we don't like to use often. Everyone else does. We don't like that because it's supposed to have meaning. It's like the word awesome. If something is awesome, it's because it creates awe. It should not just be, you know what? That door is awesome. There should be something there. Your mom was awesome. You are awesome.
That's very nice of you. Thank you.
But it's true because I've watched you walk into rooms and I've seen the reaction. And then, of course, getting to hear you speak to my dad the other night. And you were dropping pretty amazing pearls of wisdom, left and right, really. Our favorite that we've shared with everyone is what you said about not going to your trailer. I've said this to every actor friend I have. If Jamie Lee Curtis says this, then you better. And it's so smart. Would you mind please sharing this particular?
Yeah. So it was in reference to
Knives Out.
Knives Out.
It was in reference to Knives Out specifically, but it's more a bigger idea. And the reference to Knives Out was simply that there was a base camp. Obviously, there were many, many actors, and that we all had these big trailers. And from the moment I began the movie, as soon as I was in my wardrobe, which is the reason for trailers, as far as I'm concerned, is to use the restroom and change your clothes. And maybe take a nap at lunch should you need to.
Yes.
But the minute I am dressed, I leave the trailer. And I went up to the house and I ended up becoming very close with the woman who owned the house in the movie Knives Out, who was the eldest daughter of a family. And she also was in control of her family. And so it was like she and I bonded.
Yeah.
And her name is Charlotte. And I just saw her in London, actually. And what happened was that at the end of the movie, somebody, when we were promoting the movie, asked Rian Johnson, who's your MVP performer in the movie? And obviously there were many of us. And without missing a beat, he said, Jamie. And the person said, why? And he said, because she was always on set. Mm-hmm. And I ended up putting her in shots that I wasn't even planning on using her in because she was always there. That isn't why I go to set. I go to set because we're making a movie. We as a group of people are making a movie together. And the set is where it's happening. And the trailer is not where it's happening. Mm-hmm. And my experience is from the beginning of my career was that I wanted to be on the set. I was on the set of Everything Everywhere All at Once all the time, sitting there watching the shots, watching the other work going on. To me, that's the reason to be part of a community of collaborating artists, is to be there in support, in just your presence for the crew, that you're there with them, I think is an important distinction. And the actors get bad raps. I understand there are some people who feel they have to distance themselves from everybody in order to do the work they do,
Everybody does their own thing.
Exactly. To thine own self be true. Whatever your thing is your thing. My experience is be part of it as much as you can. And so that was what the commentary was in reference to.
But
now that's sort of hard earned wisdom,
yeah.
Right? From experience.
Well, yes. And I also find that trailers just they're isolating, and I don't have, claustrophobia, but I want to be around people. I love the collaborative art form that is the movies. I love crews. I love getting to know the people I'm working with so that we are all workers among workers, even though I'm in front of the camera, the people that operate the camera, the people that move the camera around, the people that put the lights up, the people that put the food on the table, the people that put the prop in your hand, all of the different technical jobs that the movie business has, and there are a lot of them. I like to be part of that community. And that's always been something from the beginning of my first jobs when I was a contract player at Universal to the last movies that I've just finished.
Did you visit your father or mother's sets?
You know, there are pictures of my sister and I on set. I think they were family conjugal visits, if you will. I think it was a bit of a photo op.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was ever hanging out.
Sure.
I think we were brought by governesses or nannies or, and maybe we spent an hour, but it was mostly photo ops because we're usually dressed similarly, my sister and I. You know, there are obviously a couple pictures of us visiting sets. But the truth of the matter is, I don't like people visiting me on set. It's our workplace. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a place for family. I don't want to. You handed off your daughter to your mom so you could do your work.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem. If I'm now an actor, I'm in makeup, I'm in my wardrobe, and my children come, now I'm their mom.
Right.
Now I need to focus on them as their mom. And at any moment, I'm going to hear 5 minutes, Jamie. And then I have to detach from them because my job is to go do that other work. And they don't want to detach.
Right.
They've just reattached.
Right.
And they don't want to. And then you get into that difficulty of this constant starting and stopping. I don't like friends to visit me. I don't like having people sitting on the set in director's chairs, watching, listening to the scenes. Excuse my French. What the fuck are they there for? They're not part of it.
Yeah.
I also don't like to visit sets.
Mm.
People will say, come visit me. And I'm like, oh, really? No. Oh, because for a couple of reasons. A, I'm not involved with this community, so I feel like I'm in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And B, I'm famous and I'm going to draw some weird attention, and it's not my place to do so.
Yeah.
The set is a creative petri dish,
mm-hmm.
and it is sacred space. And the visiting friends and family and blah, don't like it. Never liked it with my kids. Didn't really do it with my parents. And you can't really get dirty because
sure.
you're wearing wardrobe. So you have to put on, usually it's like you have to put on something so that if your kids are there, they're not going to get like a peanut butter and jelly stain on your wardrobe. And then the wardrobe department has to deal with it. It's not fair.
Yeah.
So I'm not a fan of trying to mix family and work. I often say, well, show me what other work people, I mean, nurses don't have their little kids come and visit. Like, it's just a weird job. And I try not to cross-pollinate.
Yeah.
So can you remember being conscious of when you became aware of what your parents did for a living?
No, I have no connect to that awakening. I think it was just a saturated absorption from a very young age. I don't remember seeing them in anything. I don't remember going to see them in anything. I think I made up stories when I first became an actor of the first time I saw Psycho. It didn't happen. I I have appreciated their work as an adult now more when I have the time, often when they are being honored or TCM is doing the Janet right. Leigh week. And right. then they wanted me to do a commentary. And then I took the time and watched the movies. I mean, even her first movie, The Romance of Rosie Ridge, where she was discovered by Norma Shearer. I had never seen it until 5 years ago when TCM did a Janet Leigh week. I had never seen it. Mm. And then I was absolutely gobsmacked at her beauty, mm-hmm. which was just shocking how gorgeous she is and how deep a well that work in that movie. That movie, she would always tell us the story that her first line in that movie that she ever said on screen was, I think when like a town, not a mailman, but someone who knew something going on, walked by her, her character said, "Any news, ninny nat." Ninny Nat being the whoever the person was. And her line to him was, "Any news, Ninny Nat?" And I always thought that the movie, The Romance of Rosie Ridge, was this Any News, Ninny Nat movie. I didn't realize it had depth. It was about war and after the war. And it was very, it was beautiful to see. But, you know, I've probably never seen all of their work, and I probably never will. I mean, again, it's unlikely I ever will take that amount of time, but yeah. But I am aware of it.
Yeah, of course you are. But it's different, I think, when it is your life and you have your own experiences with your parents. You know, so I think that there's pride in it that this is what your parents did, but you don't necessarily need to watch everything, go through everything.
Yeah, I am not a Janet Leigh cinephile. I'm not right. a Tony Curtis cinephile. And by the way, my own children are not going to be Jamie Lee Curtis cinephiles. Everybody's going to be a Christopher Guest cinephile.
You have to be.
Yes.
Because you just have to be. But yes. My children aren't interested in my work any more than they're not disinterested. They are happy for me, but they have their own lives. And my continuing this work, even at this age, you know, is met with pride.
Mm-hmm.
Happy for me.
Yeah.
Their mom.
Ooh, yeah.
And complete disinterest, because why would they be interested any more than why would I be interested in seeing Prince Valiant? Like, it just doesn't, everybody moves on with their lives.
Right.
You know, Chris is another story, but you know, his filmography is also much smaller.
Yes.
And a very concentrated,
right.
A shorter dose of very specific
Brilliance.
Work.
Yeah. Brilliant. Just to be crystal clear for our yes. listeners, Jamie is happily married to Christopher Guest, the auteur of such wonderful films as Waiting for Guffman and Best in Show and A Mighty Wind.
Yes.
For Your Consideration.
And so many, oh God, his movie, I just.
Well, and he made a wonderful movie that he didn't write, but he directed, called The Big Picture.
Big yep. Picture.
Is a very good cautionary tale about show business.
Yes.
And, you know, I to be honest, I had to exorcise, or I don't know if that's the right word. Exorcise for
get
your consideration. Say again.
He said, get rid of.
Get rid of. I had to I had to stare it down. I had to kind of stare down. Well, I needed to move away for your consideration so that I could have my own experience with a very real situation, which was people starting to whisper in my ear about the Oscars. And from the beginning, when Heidi Schaefer, my publicist of 40 years, and my agent, Rick Kurtzman, my agent of 30 years, called me in the summer to talk about a campaign that A24 was going to, take on for the movie.
This is for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes. And I said to my agent and my publicist, why did you talk to them? And they said, well, they wanted to talk to us about you. And I said the F word many times to my very close friends and colleagues and said, I don't want to know about this. Mm-hmm. I can't know about this. This is not something that I can even entertain. I said, you know, that's just too much for me. Mm-hmm. Just not going to go there. And then what happened is I went out and promoted Halloween. And during the promotion of Halloween, it began. I was on a TV show and someone said, hey, we're hearing a lot of Oscar buzz. And again, I sort of tempered it with like, oh, wouldn't that be amazing? And I chose at that moment to lean in. You know, there's two choices. Lean in and go, wow, wouldn't that be amazing? Mm-hmm. And lean back and go, no, never going to happen. Back the fuck off. I chose to lean in, not for myself. I'm talking about the movie.
Yeah. Yes.
Just the love of the movie. I leaned in. I kept saying, wouldn't that be amazing? Wow. That would be a fantastic result of this little movie that could. Wouldn't that be great? And so as it was continuing, and then names get printed on lists and people call you and go, hey, so-and-so just, and you're like, you know what? Stay away. I just want to stay in the flow of wouldn't it all be so great? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm myself. And I'm married to a man who made a movie about what happens to people when someone starts whispering in their ear and what the changes that come over you. And as I said to my husband the night before the nominations, when he said to me, what are you doing tomorrow? And I said, well, the Oscar nominations are tomorrow morning. And he said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to watch them. And he said, why? And I said to him, I need to move past your movie, which was a fiction. Mm-hmm. And you guys very specifically wrote the very sad, disappointing, crushing reality for those performers who are told they're going to get an Oscar nomination and they don't. Mm-hmm. And I said to Chris, this is my life, babe. Mm-hmm. And I need to face the truth. So I'm going to watch them because I'm either going to watch them live and be disappointed, or I'm going to be in the kitchen playing with Rooney, but I'm going to be looking at my phone.
Right.
And if my phone goes off at 5:35, I'm going to know something good happened. Yeah. And if my phone doesn't go off at 5:35, I'm going to know it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And either way, I'm going to have to face the reality of the thrill or the disappointment. And I said, so it's real. It's not a fiction. This is me at 64. And so I chose to look at it that way. But it's been interesting to be married to him because, of course, he has a very specific feeling about all of that. And that movie very specifically points to, you know, the randomness of it, the anyway, you know what it points to. So no, it's been, it was an interesting moment for me.
Of course. Well, and you posted these wonderful photos that your friend came to your house in the morning.
Yeah.
I think, and you know this, you always say you're a truth teller. And I think that part of what people will always relate to with you is you're extremely honest in all facets. And so talking about like you are right now about something like this, which is true, what actor doesn't want to be nominated for an Academy Award? What person who is in the industry doesn't want to be? I have to tell you that. We were at an event and Emma Stone had just been nominated for an Oscar. And someone goes, the first question someone asks, so have you always wanted to be nominated for an Academy Award? And I watched her because she's a thoughtful young woman. And she went, yeah, I think what she wanted to say was, well, duh, everybody,
Right, sure.
In what world do you not want? It's one of the highest honors in this industry.
Honestly, in our industry,
you know,
for an actor.
Yeah.
There is no higher, community.
Yeah.
Of respect.
Yeah.
Than the Academy, the Motion Picture Academy of Arts and Sciences. It's the big show. It's the big game. It's like the Masters in golf.
Yep.
You can have all these other tournaments, but then there's the Masters.
Yep.
And the Oscars are that.
Yep.
I also, you have to remember, and obviously your dad and I spoke of this, I live a real life. I have my feet on the ground. I sold yogurt for money.
Goddamn right.
Poop to be able to raise my children in Los Angeles and not have to travel and do movies away from them. What I'm saying is, with all of the genre movies that I have been in, where genre movies get absolutely no legitimate cred, no street cred from these higher echelons of the artistic community, they just don't.
Mm-mm.
So I'm a genre actor. I've been in horror movies, which don't get that level of attention,
mm-hmm.
even though the work is deeply emotional, it's physical, it's complex, you're mm-hmm. still creating characters. It just sort of seems to pass people by. And I've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
And so within that, I've just accepted that that wasn't going to be the way. And then I've been in a lot of comedies, which also don't seem to get the attention.
Yep.
Which is also fine.
Yeah.
So when I say that I was surprised and shocked, the true surprise was I never thought that would happen.
Of course.
And I certainly, when we all showed up on that first day in Simi Valley to film Everything Everywhere All at Once, where there were no trailers.
Yeah.
Because we used offices in the building as our dressing rooms. The last thing any of us thought, including yours truly, was that that work was going to generate 11 Oscar nominations. That was not, whether or not people thought the movie would be good, people would enjoy it.
Yeah, they knew
that artistically it had something to say. Visually it had a story to tell. We knew Michelle Yeoh was great. All of that aside, there was just not, this was not an Oscar track movie. And then it didn't come out for two years. So the surprise of all of it, a movie that's been out since April of last year, a movie that generated real appreciation from people, a movie that then raised the level of revenue for A24 to its highest level. I'm competitive. Mommy likes a good, don't get me started with me and Marvel and going at Marvel and throwing it like to them, like, okay, come for me, Marvel. I'm coming for you because I'm competitive.
Yeah.
We made a movie for what they spend on the craft service budget. We made an entire movie that was performing at the box office. And so I was like, you know, this with the Marvels, like, come on. I got very Italian, very like, you know, competitive.
Yeah.
And even then, I still never went like, oh, I wonder if like, and then it was just for a second, it was like, well, Michelle is so great. Boy, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
And then it was like, well, the movie is so great. Wouldn't that be great? And then whatever that first set of prognosticating, you know,
factors, people, all
lists and awardings and unexpected things out of the blue, reading that this all of a sudden Key and the movie and Paul the editor and the Daniels and the screenplay and the movie and Michelle and Stephanie and me and like all of it started to happen, and I was like, what? And the what part of it has continued to, as you said, the morning of the Oscars, I was sitting where I am sitting right now by myself with a cup of coffee. My little dog Rooney was in the bed next to me, which he is right now. And my phone went off at 5:06, not five. I've been saying it was later. It was 5:06 in the morning. And my phone, I looked at my phone, it was a text from my friend Deborah Oppenheimer, who, weirdly enough, is the only person I know personally with an Oscar.
Wow. And
I say that to you, and your dad's laughing. Think about it. Think about how long I've been.
I'm not laughing. No, I'm no, but smiling.
How long I've been in show business.
Yes, yes.
How many people I know in show business.
Yep.
And I'm talking about people I know well.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie is the godmother of Ruby. Like, this is a woman I know well who was a television producer who won an Oscar for a documentary that she made about her mother, who was one of the Kinder transport children that the Germans allowed 10,000 Jewish children to leave unaccompanied on trains before they shut down, before Kristallnacht, and then they closed that program and exterminated the rest of the Jews in Germany. And her mother was one of those children. Mm-hmm. And then her mother's story, when her mother died, my friend Debbie, who's a television producer, was given some letters, and then the cascade of getting those letters transcribed, starting to learn about the program, because her mother never spoke of it. Because, you know, of course, her mother moved to America, had three children.
Yeah.
And anyway, my friend Debbie won the Oscar for documentaries that year at the Oscars. And the day of her Oscar ceremony, first of all, I was her friend through all of it. I remember every step of the process of that movie. She lost her funding at some point. Warner Brothers stepped in. I mean, I remember all of it. And then the day of the ceremony, I'm a photographer. And my friend Debbie let me show up at her house with my Leica. And very quietly, I photographed her getting ready. I photographed her reading the book of letters between her parents and the other children of the Kinder transport and their parents before the letters stopped coming. And she had this big notebook of photographs and letters, and she was sitting in her bedroom looking at that before she got dressed for the fancy part. Then she got dressed. I took pictures of her as she got dressed, as she got in the car, and then came home and watched her win the Oscar. Debbie Oppenheimer texted me at 5:06. And I looked at my phone, where I am sitting right now, my phone right here. I went like this. And she said, I'm sitting in my car across the street. I didn't know if you wanted company. And I walked outside and I opened my gate in my bare feet in my pajamas. And there was Debbie And Debbie came in and sat next to me. And I was just so moved that my friend Debbie, who knew how complicated all this had been for me, because it was complicated.
Of course.
And she sat next to me, and I remember looking at her, kind of like the thing started, and I didn't take my eyes off her. She was holding my hand. I was looking right here like this. She was sitting right here, and I was like, okay, let's go. Because I knew it was the first award that they announced. Yeah. It's always the actress, supporting actress. And I sat there, and then I sat there like this. And then at the first three names came up, and I don't know, because I don't pay attention to this, that it's alphabetical.
Mm-hmm.
So first three names came up and mine wasn't there, and it wasn't the alphabetical. I just was like, oh yeah, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. I literally, three names came up and I went, I think I said to her, it's not going to happen. And then mine was the fourth name.
And then
Stephanie's was the fifth. And it was Stephanie's is the moment. There's a picture of me. In fact, it's right here because I had it printed. This is me watching.
Yeah.
This is me just saying, yeah, it's not going to happen. That was, it happened. That was Stephanie. That was me looking at Deb like, holy shit, this just happened. And then I started to sob. But it was Steph where I really, that moment was that. And you know what? I was as surprised as any person could have ever been, and as moved and delighted. And that has not stopped for 1 second through this entire season of Shiny Things, which I also have a lot of perspective on. I refer to it that way because it is a bit of a grind.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of shiny things, thanks to you guys, bestowed upon people. I also keep a pocket of shiny balls in my purse, and I like to give them to my fellow nominees so that we all have something shiny in our hand so we don't go home empty-handed, because it feels shitty.
Yeah.
To lose and not have something. Because I totally believe, for me, that was the win.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. Mm-hmm. I say that to you with a full and open and honest heart. I don't care. That isn't, I have not laid in bed going, oh, I wonder if that's going to happen. The win was that moment, and it was unexpected. And so the joy of that moment has stayed with me, and it will stay with me all the way through. And I'll have a little gold ball in my hand, and I have a purse full of them right now for the SAG Awards so that all my people will have a little something in their hand if we don't win, so that we just can hold on to just the beauty of the work and not worry about the trophy.
Well, as you know, there are only, I mean, the number of people who have been nominated for Oscars and the number of people who have won, it is not a large number. And that's why when I really do believe when someone says it's an honor to be nominated, I believe that, because your peers have chosen you. And what more, you know, the idea that people look and they say, yes, you deserve to be honored in this moment. It's huge.
And for work about these really incredibly moving people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's also, it's also that Beirdre is taking me to the Oscars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. With her perfect nails.
With her perfect nails and broken heart.
Yes.
You know, her longing, all the longing for connection that we all have, that people who are civil servants, people who do those jobs that nobody likes, postal workers and IRS auditors and people who have a power in the bureaucracy of our lives, that some of them wield with a lot of hidden, you know, there's a great quote from John Steinbeck. One child denied the love he craves, kicks the cat and hides his secret guilt. You know, that like all of these are hurt people. And you know, the phrase hurt people,
hurt people.
Mm-hmm. And so Deirdre is just another hurt person. And then she uses her job to hurt people.
Yep.
In kind of that slightly sadistic way of working her power. And that's who's taking me to the Oscars, is a complex, interesting, dark, beautiful human.
Mm-hmm.
Fully formed human.
Yeah.
Oh, fully formed indeed. Yeah. Yes.
I have to tell you, because we had a wild experience at the Critics' Choice Awards. We were next to the A24 tables. Now, you weren't there because of friggin' COVID, but watching Key, who we found out, you know, took my dad's class at USC 20 years ago.
25.
You know, who is just like the most, you just want to squeeze him. Like, what a gentle, kind, incredible young man. And the Daniels, who could not be nicer or sweeter or warmer. Everybody involved in that film, it's just, they're just beautiful people. Michelle Yeoh is a goddess. Like, I like that people seem to finally maybe be noticing this, because they keep talking about her, not just for this film, but recently, because my God, she's spectacular.
Yes, without question.
But we were sitting there as everybody kept winning. And so we're right next to this. And you want to talk about energy.
And Brendan Fraser was at that table.
Brendan Fraser was right behind me at the next table. So they're winning. And that is, awards are not real, right? It's award shows are not real. Like, all of this stuff that we live in is this crazy world, right? We live in this world of creative people, and it's all kind of make-believe in the best way. And when you see people like Brendan winning, and you see Kane, you see all the, it's like the joy is so real. And man, that was an incredible experience.
And I actually, I mean, when I thought about it afterwards, would I have loved to have been standing there with my friends? Of course. Would I have loved to have had that energy moment with my friends? Of course. But I also was able to listen.
Mm.
And when Jonathan Wong, our producer, talked about his family, mm-hmm. and immigrants and what people sacrifice to provide for their children better opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all the Nepo baby conversations. And, you know, it can be a distraction, because what he was talking about was so real and so important and so much about what this movie is about and what we as a country do to immigrants. Not very nice.
Mm-mm.
It's a very tough road we put them through. And then, of course, me thinking about my own family, which with all the Nepo baby stuff, you forget that Bernie Schwartz had parents from Matészalka, Budapest, and Hungary. And Jeanette Helen Morrison had family from Bornholm, Denmark.
Mm.
And they came to America and struggled. Poverty, difficulties, death, the immigrant experience. And then their children, both of them, were discovered by the industry that we're talking about. Tony, you know, hustling in New York and kind of discovered on the streets of New York. And Janet being discovered, a photograph of her enticing Norma Shearer to take the photograph to Hollywood and bring it to Lou Wasserman, my godfather, who gave me the strand of pearls with Edie Wasserman that I wore to the nominees luncheon. That was the strand of pearls that Edie and Lou Wasserman gave me as my godparents. But, you know, Norma Shearer gave that photograph of Jeanette Helen Morrison to him. And then he called for her. They called for her. And then she got The Romance of Rosie Ridge opposite Van Johnson, the Ryan Gosling of his day. Right. And she became Janet Leigh. And Bernie Schwartz became Anthony Curtis, in which they shortened to Tony Curtis because of Curtiz, the Hungarian photographer. Mm-hmm. So the immigrant experience is mine too.
Absolutely.
Not just the Everything Everywhere All at Once immigrant experience, but it was very important for me to have the perspective. Right. I don't know if all of that would have happened had I been there. I think I just would have been head cheerleader. I would have started the Michelle Yeoh chant.
Yep.
You say Michelle, I say Yeoh, Michelle Yeoh. Like, I would have been that girl because that's who I am.
Yes.
And I think I would have missed this deeper moment, which was very emotional for me because I did think about my Hungarian grandparents and my Danish grandparents.
Did you know
that? I did think about my parents' humble, harrowing, sad, brutal, poverty-ridden life, mm-hmm. both of them. And then it came to me in this moment and my own struggles and right. my own difficulties and my own life on life's terms,
right,
which has been harsh at times and transformative at times. And that all of it really came to me in that moment that I don't think I would have had I been there. I think I would have it would have been a lot of high voices and wine breath rather than this deeper moment of gratitude for this life, this creative life that I get to be a part of.
Did you ever get to meet your grandparents?
I met my paternal grandmother. My paternal grandfather died a week before I was born.
Wow.
And I met my paternal, I knew my maternal grandmother. My maternal grandfather had killed himself prior to my birth. So, you know, there's a lot of sadness.
Yeah.
A lot of, mm-hmm. you know, the rags to riches stories mm-hmm. of, you know, we were talking about James Hong starting that East-West Players. You know, my grandmother and grandfather, before I was born, there was a group of celebrity parents there for all of these parents whose kids came to Hollywood and became big stars. They had a group of all of these parents who now came to Hollywood, whose kids now bought them houses in Hollywood, and they formed like their own little community of star parents when their kids were Jeanette Morrison 2 years before, and yeah. now their child is Janet Leigh. And
they were written up in the fan magazines.
Yes, yes. And so, you know, all of it is a mind fuck. Mm-hmm. All of it. Show off business is very tricky. Mm-hmm. It's filled with artifice and lies, novelties and regrets. It's got what, you know, wonderful dreams associated with it. My mother's autobiography was called There Really Was a Hollywood because mm-hmm. Janet stayed in that sort of delusional state that when she came up, it was a Hollywood. And Tony, you know, really took a different tack and was quite critical and difficult and was quite combative in his stardom. It was not, Janet was just sort of wide open and joyful. And Tony was like, you know, he was a fighter. And yeah. so it just was, it's super interesting because if you start peeling back the onion, you're going to find that everybody has tragedy, everybody yeah. has joy. And it is the great common link, which then reminds me back to be where your feet are,
yeah.
be who you are, know who you are, don't fall prey to the fake part.
I forget if it was George Bernard Shaw. I hope I'm getting this right. He said, breathe, but don't inhale.
Yeah, far out. Yeah. And I have, before we leave each other, I will say that the great benefit of being a Nepo baby, and by the way, a Nepo baby is bullshit because baby is you got the job because your parents were famous. And the truth is I have never worked for anybody who I've ever known. I've only worked for strangers. Yeah. So the Nepo baby thing doesn't really hold, but the Nepo baby conversation, the thing that people miss is the great benefit is that I know what to look out for mm-hmm. because I've seen my parents fall prey to it. Mm-hmm. I know about the fake parts and other people who are coming up who aren't. I know so much about the industry. And I think that's an incredible benefit because it actually allows me to have my feet on the ground.
Of course. Two things I want to ask you.
What, Leonard? What?
Here they are in order of
yes.
no particular order. Arnold Schwarzenegger was a huge Tony Curtis fan, you told me.
Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger was a huge Tony Curtis fan, so much so that when he directed the movie that he directed, it was called Christmas in Connecticut.
The TV mm-hmm.
And it was a yeah. television film, a Christmas movie, and it starred Tony Curtis and Diane Cannon as a couple. And yes, so Arnold was a very big Tony Curtis fan, which is why I think he was hesitant when James Cameron said that he wanted me to play Arnold's wife. I think Arnold quite understandably questioned it because I was Tony's daughter and he knows me socially in you know what I mean? Like, I just yes. don't think he ever thought of me as a leading lady.
Sure.
Like his wife in this big two-hander.
Yeah.
I just don't think and to his credit, I totally, if the tables were turned and if it was the opposite, I would have probably felt the same way.
Yeah.
I've been like, wait, what? No, not her, him. No, not him. No, I've known, no, I really do think it took him a minute to come around to the idea. Mm.
And you told me that you were driving with your father one day and he gave you,
yes.
Unexpectedly,
yes.
spur of the moment, a piece yes. of advice.
So, you know, everybody wants advice. How do you do this in show business? How do you do this? Of course, everybody wants the path. We want the secret. Mm-hmm. Open the door, here's how you do it. Tony Curtis told me two things. The first thing he told me, which is, I'm going to say it was advice. It was a statement of real truth, was that he reminded me that in every contract is the word in perpetuity. Which means forever. And that when you're signing a contract for whatever work you're doing or whatever work you're thinking of doing or anything you're thinking of doing in the work, any scene you're going to be naked in, it is owned by that film company in perpetuity,
mm-hmm.
which clearly was a legal term that he learned very early on when he was starting to try to become a producer and starting to be a businessman. And clearly he had a very good legal mind. He had a very good business mind. My mother had no concept of business. My dad, very good business mind. And that was a piece of advice he gave me. But the one you're speaking of, Leonard, is that we were in his convertible Rolls Royce. He was a very grand guy. We were on Santa Monica Boulevard in what is now called West Hollywood at the corner of Santa Monica Boulevard and La Cienega. And I don't know why I was in the car with him. I clearly was an actress at that point. And he was driving and he wore leather driving gloves and blue sunglasses. I mean, he was like all that. And I remember he turned to me and he said in his way, "Never let them shoot you with anything less than a 50. And then the light turned green and we drove off. And what he was saying to me is that in the movies, the 50 millimeter lens is as wide a lens as I should allow someone to shoot me. Clearly, he is a very handsome man, learned that you look better in a 50 or 75 or a 100. It's a long lens. It's a beautiful lens to shoot portraiture. A 35 millimeter lens is slightly more distorted, and a really wide angle lens is really distorting. And he was warning me that I should be careful. What he neglected to pay attention to is that I have a face the size of a door wedge. And so the truth is, a 35 actually helps me a little. I'm perfectly happy doing a nice close-up in a 35 millimeter lens because, honestly, having a little skinny face, any caricature of me is I have like a hatchet face, like a little skinny V like this with two eyes and big breasts. That's the caricature of Jamie. And so I wasn't as worried about that. He, this handsome man, was more worried about the way he looked. That was the other great benefit for me. And you're going to tell me to shut up, but I'm just going to tell you this.
We would never tell you to shut up for any reason. Go on.
I'm cute. And at times I can look quite beautiful, but I was not a beauty. And beauty was not my ticket. I did not get in on beauty. My mother was so shockingly beautiful that it's painful. Tony, so handsome. I was cute. I had a lot of personality, but I didn't come in going, looking in a mirror. Like Tony tells the story. He was in the Navy and they would have the lights that you flash on and they have this big rounded reflective surface that the light goes on and off and on and off. And that's how they signal each other. Mm-hmm. And he was that guy. And he would see his face lit in the reflective part of the light on the Navy ship. And he knew he should be on the movie screen. Wow. He would look at his face and be like, I look good. My mother, incredibly beautiful. I was not that. And again, not self-deprecating.
Yeah.
I can look beautiful, but it was not my thing. And because it wasn't my thing, it helped me because, anyway.
No, it's growing up here as I did. And I had a lot of friends who were actors. My friends who were really gorgeous blondes, like perfect, stunning, they couldn't get work because they had competition. And my friends who looked different, cute, girl next, something different, that got work. And it was the strangest thing to be 15 and I have a million health problems. I've always been in hospitals and surgeries and stuff like that. So to have that being me, and I'm being told by these stunning, like knockout, like they never had puberty issues. They went from like adorable children to stunning teenagers. They can't get work because they look too much like the next person. And it's a crazy world to grow up in and to understand,
Yes.
Really, really is. I want to make sure before you go, I want you to talk about your charities because first of all, you've sent us two gifts, two insanely thoughtful gifts. One for our dogs, which when we opened it up, we thought, oh my paw in yours. So both Logan and Mabel have some very fancy bowls and leashes, which was just so incredibly kind. And then you met my daughter, our tiny menace Daisy, and you sent over this stack of books. I didn't know you wrote children's books. You sent over this incredible stack of books, and they're signed and they're for her. And I can't wait for her to understand what they are and that you gave them to her, because it's just so, so thoughtful of you. And it makes me, I'm an emotional person, but it makes me, it's just so kind. And she's gonna understand it at some point, and it's got your tag on it, everything. Please talk about your charities and talk about what you do.
Well, that's very nice of you to bring it all up. I've been writing books for children since my daughter was four. So I've been writing books for children for 33 years. Amazing. And I have a new one being published next spring, or where are we? We're in February, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe it's being published this year. Called Just One More Sleep, Good Things Come to Those Who Wait and Wait and Wait. I write books for children that was a surprise to me. I never thought I would write books for children. And my four-year-old said something funny. And she kind of marched in my room, and she made this declaration at four of like, when I was little, I wore a diaper, but now I use a potty. And she kind of marched out of the room. And I remember exactly where I was sitting, exactly where I, like, what was in front of me. And I had a pad, and I wrote down on a pad, when I was little, a four-year-old's memoir of her youth.
Amazing.
Which made me laugh. And then I wrote a list of things that she couldn't do and then could do.
Yeah.
And then at the end, I wrote three things, and I started to cry. And the three things I wrote were, when I was little, I didn't know what a family was. When I was little, I didn't know what dreams were. When I was little, I didn't know who I was. But now I do. Mm. And at that moment, I found myself crying. And I realized in that moment that it was a book for children.
Mm-hmm.
And I called my mother-in-law's best friend, who was a literary agent. She faxed it. It was a new thing, a fax, to HarperCollins, who bought it that day. I said to them, I'm come to HarperCollins because they published a book that I loved, because my daughter's name was Annie. And there was a book by a writer named Leah Kamiko called Annie Banani.
Mm-hmm.
And the illustrator of that book was a woman named Laura Cornell. And she drew people the way I imagine I look. Not the pretty golden book children with their cherubic faces and the blonde hair and their little pinafores. Her kids' hairs always were sticking out, and they had Band-Aids. And I like really related. And that's how I started writing books. I've written, I don't even know, 15 of them. They are my absolute best thing. I never thought I would do it. They just come to me. I don't think about them. And then one day they come to me. The new book, Just One More Sleep, Good Things That Come to Those Who Wait and Wait and Wait, was born during COVID when my neighbor Betty, I ran into her on the street. You know, remember, we couldn't see each other. We were like 10 feet apart, wearing masks. And I remember seeing her on the street. It was the Christmas of COVID. So it was 2020 Christmas, right in the balls of it, just awful. And I remember saying to her, hey, Betty, Santa's on his way. And it was Christmas Eve, 5 o'clock. I said, Santa's on his way. And she got mad at me, and she looked at me, and she went, no, Jamie, one more sleep, then Santa. And I realized children think about time very different than we do. She couldn't conceptualize that Santa was already flying because it was Christmas Eve.
Right.
Like, all of the time was irrelevant to her. Mm-hmm. She was told one more sleep, then Santa.
Right.
And I went home and wrote a book. And so it's being published next year. And I'm excited about it. But that's not a charity. Those are books that I've written and have been very successful, and I've loved them. And my partner is amazing. Right before COVID, so this was in 2019. If we had known each other, Leonard had introduced us, and then you had one of these medical situations that you just mentioned. My guess is I would have sent something to you, and I would have written you a note. And on the note, I would have said, Jesse, I've heard the thing. You're a strong person. You're going to be okay. You have great family. And then at the end of the note, I would have written, my hand in yours, Jamie, which is simply a way of saying, I care about you. Mm-hmm. Imagine what it would feel like to have my hand in your hand. Mm-hmm. And I realized, as a way to raise money for Children's Hospital Los Angeles, I went to a sculptor who I collect, and I collect her little feet. So be where your feet are. Mm-hmm. Here are a pair of little bronze feet made by Ann Ricketts, and I collect her sculptures. And I went to her and I said, I would like to commission you to make a sculpture of two hands holding. So it's weighted, it's heavy, it's made of bronze, it's polished. And I said, I would like to sell them on a website, or, I'll sell them and raise money for Children's Hospital, Los Angeles, just as a way to connect people. And I started a company called My Hand in Yours. And then COVID hit. And this was right before COVID. I had planned it. And then COVID hit. And then the severity of COVID became a reality for the world. And I launched a company right when the world needed some comfort. Mm-hmm. And my little website offers comfort items to people in times of crisis. Yeah. And I built it out and added more and more things. And the little company that could has now raised over $1 million for Children's Hospital Los Angeles in a couple of years. Fantastic. Through the sale of things like the sculptures, beanies, necklaces, candles.
Real Housewives of Beverly Hills chime.
Yes, the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills chic chime. Coffee mugs. It is a little mom and pop. It's me and Jenny next door. We run it out of my offices next door. And it is, we do all the shipping. We do it all. And so it's been a really beautiful bit of advocacy. I don't know. Maybe it'll be evergreen. Maybe I'll close it in a year, having raised a certain amount of money. And it's been a really beautiful bit of advocacy for me and a way to connect people to it, which is what's so nice about it. Thank you for asking about it.
I had IVF through COVID, which is the one positive for us, is that we were stuck in one place long enough to go through to be able to do it. And while I was pregnant, because I had going to have all these problems, I had to go get tested absolutely everywhere. And they kept checking Daisy's heart at the Children's Hospital. And so that is where I found out about six different times that her heart was strong. Good. And being there is, my God, is it emotional? Because see, it's a lot. It's a lot to handle. But I'm very grateful to them because they let me know that Daisy's heart was going to be okay. And when she was born, she is indeed incredibly healthy. And we're so lucky.
Yes, you are. And they are a beautiful institution who will treat any child regardless of their family's ability to pay, which, as far as I'm concerned, is the greatest advocacy you can do.
That's
the dream. And they then deserve, as far as I'm concerned, all of my time, money, energy. And I support them. And how lovely to see you guys.
You too.
Well, so pleasant.
Back at you, as they say. What a treat, Jamie. Thank you so much
for your time
this morning.
Oh, I've enjoyed it so much. And God bless you guys and little Daisy. And enjoy the rest of your day.
And that is Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Actress, nepo baby, self, self-proclaimed Nebo Benedi.
I just want, now, if you don't know, if you are one of the people who lives separate of the crazy world, this term has become really popular of late, Nepo baby, meaning nepotism baby, bringing up all these actors and actresses who are getting work because they are the child of someone famous. And here is the thing. I believe very strongly that, yes, absolutely, without question, something can get you in the door. No question about it.
Yeah.
You can have experiences other people would never have. You can do things other people would never get to do. And I don't know many people who are quote unquote Nepo babies who wouldn't say that they're very fortunate to have had everything they had. But the hope is that while it does get your foot in the door, if you're terrible, that's where it stops. Now, this isn't always the case.
You don't have to be terrible. You just have to be not very good.
That's, you know, it's, there's a lot of
people. You have to prove yourself, in other words.
And so, you know, you'd hope that even if you get that leg up, that then if you don't have the skills, then that's sort of where it ends. And I know for Jamie, because she's worked so hard and for such a long time, it's important to her that people understand that she did not get any sort of special treatment. It was, you know, her own skills. We of course always joke about nepotism. We like to say nepotism begins at home. You know, absolutely. The reason I work with my dad is because he's my dad. But my hope is that I work hard and that people will sort of come to accept me as me as well. You know,
like Stuart Smalley.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And gosh darn it, people like me.
SNL reference there.
Yes.
For those with long memories.
Yeah. Yeah, your interview with Jamie was so much fun. You guys can watch it. It's on YouTube. If you look up the Santa Barbara Film Festival, SBIFF.
Santa Barbara International Film Festival.
I think it's still streaming on YouTube. You can watch it. She's got so many interesting stories. And
she
loves
tells
to
them
tell
well.
Them. Yeah, she loves to share her stories and all of her experiences.
Lucky us.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what we'll be offering you next week, but Jamie Lee has set the bar kind of high, pretty high. But we'll do our best, folks. That's what I can promise, and we'll do our best. Until then, if people want to find us, where the heck do they find us?
I am at Jesse Malton. You are at Leonard Malton on Twitter and Instagram. You are also on Facebook. We do live streams on Sundays on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can always go to leonardmalton.com for movie reviews, book roundups, and all kinds of good stuff.
And we are on Patreon, Maltreon, as Jesse calls it.
I do.
It's patreon.com/MaltonOnMovies. And that's true even when I don't have a cold and sound terribly congested. Patreon.com/MaltonOnMovies. I write two columns every month that are only available to Patreon contributors. Yeah.
Yes.
So check it out. And whether you do or not, we're happy to have you listening. And we'll see you next week. Today's episode of Malton on Movies is brought to you by Legion M, the world's first fan-owned entertainment company. If you love movies as much as we do, why not own a piece of them? Find out more at www.legionm.com.